Hello, Blind Cool Tech listeners. Sam Britton here. We're going to try getting this recording out again. Hopefully everything will work this time. And this is going to be the tour of our broadcast studio. And wanted to get this out there because we had some questions regarding the microphones that we were using, some compliments on them, and I thought I would go through some of the items that we have here, what they are, and what I'm going to do to save time. The only items I'm going to give model numbers for are the ones that are currently out there. You'll have to explore for newer models of some of the stuff because there's a few things that are no longer made, and so it would be better if you just searched for the newer models, and I'll just tell you, you know, what they are, whether they're a professional quality piece of gear or whether they're a consumer grade or whatever the case may be. So that's probably the way we'll do that. And first of all, before we get started, I want to comment on one lingering thing from the previous podcast. I want to make sure that I'm totally clear on how I wired my backup system, because this is something that, first of all, if you're not comfortable with, I don't recommend you do it in the first place, unless you have competent, help, people who know what they're doing, you know. And so I want to make double sure that we understand what we're dealing with here as far as the way I wired these batteries here, okay? Everybody understands in a typical flashlight how batteries fit in a flashlight. I'm talking about just your typical average flashlight, you know, that like you used to see over the years, that takes 2D batteries. And of course, even though we're not dealing with D batteries, the circuit is the same. You're still dealing with a series circuit, because what happens is, in a flashlight arrangement, you put your first battery in the tube, you know, flashlight's tubular shaped, and most of them open from the bottom, at least the conventional flashlights. These new ones, I don't know about these LED lights and stuff like that, but let's just talk about the conventional flashlight, because everybody's seen one of them, so they know how they're, you know, pretty much most people know how they're made. In a typical flashlight, the first battery goes in positive post first, okay? You shove it in there, and the positive post goes, let's assuming you're holding the flashlight with the head end of it, the light end of it, down, okay? And you're dropping new batteries in it for the first time. You got the bottom cap off of it, so you drop your first battery in there post down, because that post is going to go down toward the what would normally be the front end of the flashlight, okay? That's the front part where the light protrudes from, okay? So that battery goes in positive first, positive post first. That's the pointed post on the C or D battery. Then the next battery goes in behind it with its positive post resting up against the flat negative side of the first battery. So what you have is you have two batteries in a flashlight, and the posts on the batteries on the D or C batteries go as follows: negative, positive, negative, positive. Okay. Well, you're dealing much in the same manner with these marine batteries, even though they're not a round battery, they're more of a rectangle type battery. You're dealing with the exact same series circuit. What you're doing in this case is you're taking two batteries. Each battery has its own negative and positive posts. So we're dealing with each battery having two posts, a negative and a positive. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take one post from each battery, and we're going to tie these posts together with a heavy gauge piece of wire. And I would say a heavy gauge piece of wire, preferably with a fuse in the line. Okay. Because you're dealing with high current loads here. The voltage isn't that high, but the current is very high. So you're going to take the positive post of one battery and tie it to the negative post of the other battery, okay, on one end of these batteries. You're going to bring these two batteries together, and you're going to tie the positive post to the negative post, okay? Now, you've tied these two posts together at the far end of this set of batteries, so that takes care of those two posts. That leaves two remaining posts, the positive of one battery and the negative of the other battery, still open, okay? Because remember, each battery has its own positive post and its negative posts, and it's negative post. We've already taken care of the negative and positive posts at one end of this circuit that we're designing. So that leaves the positive post of one battery and the negative post of the other battery still open with nothing connected to it at the closer end. You know, assuming you have the battery sitting in front of you with the two posts at the far end and two posts at the end closest to you. So since we've tied the positive to the negative at the far end, then that leaves the positive and negative of each battery at the end closest to you still open. And at that point, that's where your wires are going to come from your UPS that we discussed in that piece, which I hope if any of you were interested, you kept that recording. The two open posts that still remain is where your UPS is going to tie in. And so I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on that. And please, if you have any questions and you're trying to do this, I would rather you contact me first before you do it, because I don't want anybody to do something that would hurt themselves. Some people are real good at understanding circuitry. I'm the kind of person, I can sit down and I can map out a circuit in my mind and know exactly how it's supposed to go. It doesn't even have to be on paper or anything. I can just map it out in my mind, and I can see in my mind's eye, so to speak, a design of it, and then I can sit down and do the handwork to put it together. Now, not everybody's good at that, and so if you have problems and you need help with it, please contact me, and I will make sure, absolutely sure, that you can get this done correctly, because I'll tell you, people have been killed over, large storage batteries, doing something foolish or grounding something and causing the battery to explode, and we don't want that to happen. So we want to make double sure that we know exactly what we're doing. So I just wanted to cover that, because I've been thinking about that ever since I did that piece, and I'm thinking, my God, if I wasn't clear enough on it, somebody's going to get hurt if they try it. So don't dare try anything until you absolutely are sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that you know what you're doing. Okay, so we'll just leave that as it is, and you can contact me through the website, www.theinformationcorner.com. That's www.theinformationcorner.com. You can contact me there, and I will answer any questions. And if you do contact me there, one thing I want to mention to you is we've had to put an automated response on that thing for the benefit of the radio show, because we were occasionally getting people who would contact me not from the Blind Cool Tech list. So I want that understood. This has nothing to do with you. It has to do with some of the people on our listener lineup as far as the radio show is concerned. There are those people out there that think that you have nothing better to do than sit and answer emails all day, and they expect an answer right away. So what we did was we put an automated response on there. So whenever you send send an email through the web form at www.theinformationcorner.com, that will generate an automated response, which will come back to you as a response for a listener to the show. And just understand that we did receive your email and that I will get back to you. The problem is that we, the radio show, though we do a lot of work on the radio show, the radio show itself is not our primary mission. We do research and different things like that, and it takes time. And, when you try to do research, you can't do both research and email. And right now things are a little slow because we've been making a transition to the system 10. I'm the first one learning all the ropes. And as I'm continuing to learn stuff, I'm starting to do more with mail. But for a while, Trish was the one that's still doing most of the mail on system 9 on her machine. And, we're both using Macintoshes here, but she's still on 9 and I'm on 10. She's letting me blaze the trail, and then she'll move on over into 10 with me after that, as we can upgrade everything. So she's been doing the bulk of the mail, and I don't want to put any heavy load on her. I will just ask that you be patient with me, but I will get to you, and we will get your question answered if there's any questions over anything we do here on the program. But don't let the automated response that you get back, should you send an email through the form on the website, don't let that get to you, because that is something we had to do for the listenership there. So I just wanted to make sure that you understand that, and that the email will be received. It's just that you're going to get a response back, an automated response back. And it's the same one the listeners get. And that way people know right off the bat, without us having to tell them every time, is that, hey, your email was received. We will get to you as soon as we can. And we'll do it. It's just, you know, a matter of time, so to speak. So that's what that's all about. Okay, moving right along. I feel like I've beat that dead horse all I possibly can. Let's move on to what we're really here for. And that's to talk about some of the equipment here that we have. And first, we're going to talk about the stuff that is still available. I'm talking to you right now on a Shure SM7B. This is a microphone put out by Shure, obviously. And it is a broadcast type microphone. Now, the reason we went with these as opposed to the 58s is because they have a shielding in there to keep noise out from computer monitors and stuff. Now, there's nothing wrong with the 58s. Shure makes a whole batch of nice microphones, dynamic microphones, and various other microphones for that matter, but dynamic ones particularly. But these particular mics, the SM7Bs, have shielding around them. They also have extra baffling, acoustic baffling, which means I can hit the desk and the noise from anything that I do on the desk here is kept at a minimum. And so that's one nice thing about these microphones. Also, they are extremely directional, and we're going to demonstrate that here in just a second. Let me turn it around. Hope this will still work going through the compression. Okay, now I'm talking to you with my mouth to the back of the microphone. I have the back of the microphone in front of me as opposed to the head of the microphone. And the back of the microphone is about 4 inches from me. The head of the microphone is about 6 inches from me, so you can see how directional they really are. And I'll turn it back around so that you can get a, you know, so you can hear me better. But you can see they have excellent rejection on the back. The microphones have two switches, one to attenuate bass, the other one to attenuate mid-range. I keep them both turned off, because I like the full range to come through, and then if there's anything I need to do, I'll do it through the board, through the Mackie board, because we're running a Mackie board here that has some attenuation for various phases of the microphone as well. And I can control the bass and treble from there, so why do I need to control it from the mic? You know, so I just keep the switches turned off. I like it better that way, and I think the mic sounds better, because you get the full dynamic range of the microphone, the highs and the lows, and it just works out a whole lot better that way. The SM7Bs are a pro-type microphone. They have a XLR connector on the bottom. They also have an XLR where they go into the board, although you can get a cord that has XLR on one end and quarter inch on the other. The microphones also have two windscreens that come with them. One is for work, like if you're out in the field and you're using the mics in a band concert, you put the windscreen on. One works more for announcing, and the other one's more for like band practice and stuff like that, where you're not talking right into it. Okay, I obviously don't use the thinner of the two screens. I have the thicker one on here because if I don't have them on there, you can pop your P's real bad, and I don't like that. I'll take it off and I'll show you how it sounds. Now, this is without the windscreen, and if you say any word with the letter P in it, you can pop your P's, and you can see that it can get pretty disgusting after a while. Although these mics don't pop as bad as some of them, but you can do it. And so I'm running it now with no windscreen on it at all. The head of the microphone, where the element is, kind of sticks out, almost kind of like a, it almost looks like a snout the way it sticks out. It's a big long grill type arrangement that gets fatter as you go back toward the base of the head of the microphone. The back of the microphone is flat where the switches are, with a little plate that screws over it to cover the switches to keep the dirt out of them. When you get one of these mics in the box, you'll find this little plate along with two screws, and there's, like I say, the two screws hold that plate on there. You adjust the microphone the way you want it. I don't know how, I forgot how these were when I got them out of the box. I think they came with the switch turned off, or with the bass switch turned on. So there was no bass, and I had to flip that switch to get the bass back in, if I remember correctly. And so you'll have to play around with that and decide for yourself how you like it. Now, here's the mic. I'm going to talk into the protruding element from the side. This is the mic element, and I'm talking. I turned it around with the side of the mic head facing me. And if I get myself up real close to the base of the microphone, like this, I can actually get my mouth in here and talk just behind the element. And this is what they sound like if you get right in behind the element, just barely. And I think the reason that is because the baffling is picking me up to some extent. So anyway, that's the way that goes. Let me go ahead and put the screen back on it. Okay. Now, another thing about these mics is the way they may come on the bracket, you might want to turn the bracket around on these, the bracket that allows it to be mounted on a stand. Now, the way they come is you have the mic and you have the bracket, which has the stand mount on it, which is attached to the microphone. And what they've done is there's a real short wire that comes from the XLR connector, which is on the bracket, and it goes up into the microphone. It's just a short piece of coaxial type wire, not real thick, but it's good and shielded. And so it goes from the XLR connector, which is on the mic's bracket, and goes up into the base of the microphone head, and then ties in from there. Now, when I got these, the way these mics were designed when I got them out of the box, they were designed to be hung from a mic riser, okay? I did not have a riser at the time set up. However, I am going to put one in eventually. In other words, these mics were designed actually to be hung upside down from a riser. And the way the mic risers work is they protrude down from the bottom of the riser. At least the ones I've seen work that way. And then you can raise it up and swivel it around and all kinds of stuff like that. And it just makes for real good acoustic dampening and all that kind of stuff. Well, because I had just a standard table stand here, you know, with a round base on it and that kind of thing, the bracket had to be turned around. And then what you'll find on the side of the microphone are two knobs, two little knurled knob-shaped screws. And they're about the size of a quarter in diameter, and they are knurled. They have rough edges along them. And you grab these knobs with your fingers and loosen them. And I want to warn you, when you go to loosen these to take this bracket off and turn it around, I want to warn you that there are several little washers in there and a little sleeve that helps hold these washers steady, okay? So you want to make sure that when you go to turn this element, when you go to turn this microphone head around and put it back on its bracket, you want to make sure, pay very close attention to how all the washers, I think there's about four of them all total on each side beneath each knob. You want to pay very close attention to how each set of washers come off, okay? And you want to put them back on exactly as they came off. And trust me, when I worked on my first microphone, I had one heck of a time getting all this stuff back together. So it can be done. I'm pretty good at it now. But when I first got them, man, I just fought with it like crazy. And I did finally get it together, but it was a real fight, okay? So if you decide to turn the bracket around, don't do like I did. Just take it loose and assume everything goes back real easy, because you're going to find several washers and at least two, and then a sleeve, and then another set of washers in this little sleeve that fits on the screw bolt that protrudes from the microphone. It keeps the washers separated so that the mic can swivel up and down. See, I can reach back here and I can tilt the mic. I can grab onto it from behind and tilt it back with the head end of it pointing up toward the, almost up toward the ceiling, or I can tilt it forward. So, and that's all made possible by those little washers and that little sleeve between the washers. And that's why it's very, very important that you put that on there right, because if you don't, the mic may be real loose on the bracket and it won't stay where you set it. So you want to make sure you pay very close attention to how all that comes off, and then put it all back exactly as you had it once you turned the bracket around, okay? And what I did in my case, I turned the bracket around. Since the wire comes out of the bottom rear part of the microphone head, I turned the bracket around so that the XLR is down on the same side of the microphone as the hole where the wire goes in, so that that way the wire has plenty of room to move when you swivel the microphone up and down. And I hope you understand what I'm saying. This is very hard to describe in detail, but you know, it's one of those things I don't know how to describe adequately, but I hope I'm doing a very fairly decent job, you know, let's put it that way, because it's very hard. Until you actually see how the mics are made, it's very hard to describe how these things go together, okay? All right, so let's assume now you've gotten past that. You've got your bracket turned around. You got the mic set up the way you want it. Then you can just simply screw it on a stand, plug in the cord, and away you go. And like I say, they're a close-up microphone. As you can see, they don't have a lot of distance, although by the time I put it through the limiting and the compression, they'll have a lot more fullness than they do now. Let's just put it that way, okay? As you know, all mics barefoot kind of sound dead because we're so used to hearing everything, such as the recordings we do on the various portable recorders in the compressed format. So whenever you come along and do something dead, you know, just barefoot, most people aren't used to it. Although I can do it either way, it doesn't matter, but most people are not used to it, and so usually that's why I just wind up putting the compression in there, because it fills it out and it makes it sound nice and hot, so I don't have to worry about levels, for one thing. If I record a little low, the compression compensates for it, so I usually just push it through the compression in Sound Studio, and it comes out real good then that way. So that's the deal as far as that goes. Okay, so that's the SM7B, of which there are two. There is one on a floor stand to the left of me, and I'll go ahead and pot it up here and turn this one down so you can get an idea with them turned up full what they're like. Okay, this is the SM7B across from me, and as you can see, there's not a whole lot of level on it. So I'll go ahead and pot it back down. By the time it goes through the compression, if I run it through the audio compression through Sound Studio, it'll probably sound a little bit more filled out than that, but that's the way it sounds for now. And reason I'll probably go ahead and put it through the compression is because when we do the broadcast, we usually put it through some sort of processing, which is what gives us the sound that we have when we put the shows out over Dixie Broadcasting and then also on the archives. And so I'll just do it that way. And, you know, if there's an interest in me doing the recording just straight barefoot, I can do that too. It doesn't matter. But it sure makes it a lot easier in watching your levels when you're doing the recording with the compression in there as opposed to without it. So I can do either way. You know, I can do, let me know if you want to hear it barefoot, and I can do something else in the future barefoot on the computer here just without adding anything. But the last time when I did the other recording that everybody was saying it sounded so good, the mics were part of it, but we also added some compression in there, of which I have two ways of doing that. When we go on the air, I actually have a hardware type limiter compressor. It's a Behringer limiter compressor that I use when we're on the air. And then when I'm just doing production work here, I have the compression that is set up in Sound Studio, and I run that. So that's how that works. Sound Studio is one of those programs on the computer. It's not exactly the most accessible, but it is good for what it is, and I just use it for what I can get out of it. And so that's the way that whole thing works. Okay, now one other mic we're going to use here is Trish's microphone. Now, Trish has a set of Beyer headphones, and I don't have the model on those right now, and they're discontinued. There's a newer model than that now. One thing is rock solid are the Shure mics. They don't change them very much, but these headphones, they do. And I'm going to go ahead and switch over to this pair of Beyer headphones and let you hear what they sound like. Now, these are a pair of phones. They look just like any normal pair of phones, except they have a mic element protruding from a little tube on the left side. So let me roll over here and I'll grab these. And by the way, our recording is doing real good, I can tell. So apparently it was just a case of using Audio Hijack. For some reason, I was getting some sort of an error in the sound studio. I don't know why. We'll figure that out later. So what I'm doing is I'm just going to go ahead and record it in Audio Hijack, and then process it through Sound Studio is what I'm going to do. Just add the compression in. Okay, now I've got that plugged in, the headphones, the Beyer headphones. Now let me pot down this SM7B, and I'll pot this up. Okay, now this is the headset that Trish uses. This is the pair of Beyer phones. They look just like any regular pair of headphones, other than the fact that they have this little mic element which protrudes from the left side of the headset. This is a pair of headphones which are just wonderful for guests, if you have guests. In fact, that's what I'm going to do. As soon as I can find a pair of headphones that'll fit, I'm going to try to get Trish a pair of AKGs or something and get her off of these and get her on the other SM7B. And then this I'm going to put on the guest line, and that way when we have guests, they can just put this on. There's a mic already there. They can position it however they want, as long as they get it close enough where I can have good audio on the board, that is. And then that saves us the trouble from having to line them up with a microphone, and they can sit there with both hands free and the whole bit, and it just works out a whole lot better that way. The way these work is the microphone comes down from the left earpiece on a little flexible tube. If you've ever seen those reading lamps that people have, the tube looks very similar to that, except, of course, it's miniature compared to the tubing on those reading lamps. But you've seen them. It's a corrugated-type tube, and you can bend it and move it around any way you want and position the lamp wherever you want. Well, this microphone element is exactly the same way. And the headphones, the only thing I don't like about this pair of headphones is these are strictly monitoring phones. I do not like them for setting levels, because if I'm listening under these phones, I have no way of knowing how much bass there is in the recording. And so as a result, I don't like them at all for that. You would not want these as your main pair of phones. Now, there may be a better model out now than there used to be. I know they're not making these anymore, but there may be yet a better model than these phones that I'm talking to you on now. And maybe in a future podcast, I'll bring John Sims up if he's willing to come on a podcast, and we'll talk about some of the stuff that's available. And then we will go from there. This pair of headphones, like the AKGs, which is what I listen through, which is a pair of studio phones, which are full dynamic range phones, they have one of the neatest things in that the cord can be removed from them. Let's say, you know, one of the problems you run into in the broadcast industry is that things get treated pretty rough sometimes, and I've seen it all over the place when you work in radio stations and various other facilities such as that. These headphones and microphones get beat up and banged around a lot, and the cords get stepped on and pinched and all kinds of stuff, and eventually the cords break and you got to put another cord on them. Well, the neat thing about a lot of this equipment is that the cords are modular. They can be removed. Like, for example, on this pair of Beyer headphones, the mic cord and the cord that's used for the headphone itself are all in one cable. And there's a little plug that plugs into the left earpiece where the mic protrudes from. And it has a little screw that goes through to hold the plug in place so it can't accidentally get pulled out. And what you do, if your cord's bad, you just loosen this little screw on the left side, remove the cord, plug in the new cord, replace the screw to hold the cord in place, and you're in. And it can all be changed out in about, 30 seconds or so. Now, the design may be a little different now than they used to be. I don't know. But that's the way it is, at least on these. They make two different sets of these. The last I knew, they make a arrangement of these that has the connections for just a regular cassette recorder, you know, where it has a an eighth inch mini plug for the mic, and then it's an eighth inch mini plug for the mic and another eighth inch for the headphones. And they can plug into a standard cassette recorder. And, of course, the eighth-inch stereo, the eighth-inch phone, quarter-inch. Let's try that again. The eighth-inch plug for the headphone side of it is stereo, okay? And then the, of course, the microphone end of it is just a mono connector. So that's how that whole thing works on the cassette version, which is, I call the cassette version. Maybe it's the portable version would be the best word for it. But most of your cassettes, the old cassette recorders used to use the eighth-inch jacks for everything. And, of course, we still see a lot of that today in the digital recorders and stuff as well, except that they're using eighth-inch stereo now a lot for both mics and headphones, as opposed to back in the days when we used to use cassettes. They used a lot of eighth-inch mono. And I didn't see too many cassette recorders that had eighth-inch stereo. So that's the deal as far as that goes. But these phones, like I say, they work really good. My AKGs, the cord comes off of them, too. The only difference is it's a little round connector with a little button that you press, and then you just pull the connector out of the bottom left ear cup, and it's unplugged, and away you go. And then you plug in a new cord, which you can order separate for those as well. And so anyway, that's the deal there. And the way I have Trish set up here now, when we sit in the studio, unfortunately, due to the layout of this room, which is in our basement, by the way, I forgot to mention that. This is a finished basement, so it's very conducive to doing what we're doing here. She sits with her back to me because there's not enough room to put our two desks side by side, at least not that I know of. I might be able to do something different with that in the future. I'm going to have to scope out over here, see if I got enough room on the one side here. But as of right now, she sits with her back to me. Her desk is along one wall, and then I sit with the facing the bar. There's a dry bar down here, and no, we don't do the show. We don't do the broadcast tipsy, that kind of thing. It's a dry bar. There's nothing there other than junk laying on top of it because I don't have a place to put it all, and. She sits behind me, and there's this desk over here, and we each have one of these little cough switches. It's a little button. It's a little box with a button on it, and you press it down like this, and see, if you got a cough, you just go, and it mutes the negative and positive connections of the microphone so that you can cough and people don't hear you. That way you don't have to be rude on the air. And I've got one of them on my desk. She's got one of them on hers. And what I did was I just ran some cables around the room, and she's plugged into this. And she can just push her button down when she has to cough, or I can push mine down. The only problem with it is we're still close enough that the distant microphone still picks me up if I have to cough, or my mic picks her up if she has to cough. And so it doesn't dampen it out altogether. The only way you could do that is, and there's no way of knowing, you'd have to know when one of us or the other one's going to do it, and you'd have to mute the whole board possibly, but nobody knows that. So basically, the reason for the cough switch is at this stage of the game is to totally mute it out if I'm the only one on the air. If we're both on the air, I can at least mute it out enough so I don't go blasting through somebody's speakers when I go to cough or whatever the case may be. And that works out very, very well that way, to at least dampen that, because there's nothing worse than a person not having a switch to mute their microphone if they have to cough or something like that. Okay, let me go ahead and get back on this Shure SM7B. Nope. Pot that up like this and turn this down like this. I'm going to put this away. Okay, I am unplugged from the setup over here on Trish's side. And let me look here real quick, because I'll tell you, I had a brainstorm here while I was talking to you here. And I'm going to see if there's enough room to put her desk over here if I decide to do that. Let me look at the dimensions of this desk versus that end of that bar there. Let's see. It'll just fit if I do it. So we may just change this around at some point. We'll see how that all works. But originally, when we set up in here, I put her desk... Whoops, turned the wrong thing down. I put her desk in behind me here because I didn't know if that was going to fit or not. And I mean, it works okay. You know, we're both on the mics. You don't know the difference, but it would be nice if she could be sitting right up here with me. And, you know, and I could just turn to her, you know, if I had to communicate with her. Which has happened. I had a case one time, we were interviewing a guest, and what do you do when the mics are open? You got a guest on the air and you're talking, and one of us has got to get up and go to the bathroom or something. Well, what I've had to do is I had to work out a signal by which I could tap her on the shoulder to let her know, hey, I got to disappear. Because, you know, it's rather rude, you know, get on a microphone and say, excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom. And so rather than do that, we just worked out a system so I can kind of subtly let her know that, hey, I got to abandon ship here for a while, carry on, you know. And, you know, it happens to the best of us, because I'll tell you how we do things here. We don't have commercials during the program. We just we put all the commercials at the beginning of each hour. And then we coast on through the whole hour with the guest, because when there's a real serious issue being discussed, I don't like to break up the continuity of it. So that's why we do it the way we do it, and it works out very well. And we've got a lot of compliments on that, you know, because a lot of people get aggravated, you know, with the excessive amount of commercial breaks on some programs, because you don't no more get to concentrating on something that's being said, and then all of a sudden you lose track of it because it's time out for a commercial, and the commercial has nothing to do with anything being talked about, and so on. So that's the deal there. All right, so that's the demo of the Beyer headphones. They go in. They go into her setup over there, which then in turn goes into the board over here. There's a headphone cable over there, and there's a cough switch, and all that stuff connects into the board over here in front of me, along with this microphone I'm talking to you on, and that's how we get her signal from over there to here, where we mix it down and put it out on the main outputs and send it into the system here for rebroadcast. One of the things that's neat, moving on to this Mackie mixing board, is it does have some filtering in it. We'll demonstrate some of the bass filtering. This is why I leave all the switches in on the microphone, because, you know, or leave them disengaged, rather, the filter switches for the bass and the mid-range, because I can do it right from the board here. Now, as you can see, I rolled off the bass. I just pushed the bass filter in on the Mackie board. And as you can see, it's pretty effective at taking out some of the excessive low-end stuff. Now, I'm going to thump the microphone with this filter in. As you can see, now let's take the filter out. See the difference? Filter's kind of scratchy. I'm going to have to spray that switch. It's one of the problems. You don't use these buttons all the time. These things get very, very, they can get very scratchy. I mean, and I keep a dust cover over this board when we're not actually broadcasting and or doing anything with it, and it still gets dirty. I don't care what you do. Some sort of scratchiness will get in there somehow, and you got to spray the doggone thing. That's just all there is to it. So I do have to look into that. And, of course, there's the bass and treble controls on the Mackie board. We'll go through that real quick. Here's the bass all the way in on the microphone. Test 1, 2, testing. Here's the mid-range and the bass all the way in. And here's the treble all the way in. Now we'll take out the bass first. And the mid-range next. Testing, testing. And now there's just treble. That's all there is. And let's go ahead and pot that down. Everything's down now at this point, as you can see. Let's go ahead and there's the mid-range by itself, so you can hear what it sounds like. So we'll go ahead and try to get all this stuff back in the center. It does have center detent, so you know it's not real hard to do. Okay, let's see here. There we are. Good. It's reset again. So that's the audio curves on the board. As far as what you can do with the microphones, I leave all of that stuff flat with the knobs set in the center detent. So that's how that works. And this board is a Mackie 1402. It has 6 mic inputs and 4 stereo auxiliary inputs, and also 2 auxiliary returns and 2 auxiliary sends. Now the auxiliary sends are monaural outputs. They're mainly for if you want to add some sort of audio processing in there, and you loop it through the audio processing and send it through the returns. I use them if you have a mono, like a mono cassette, and somebody wants a recording of something you're doing. I can pick audio off of one of those auxiliary sends, and I don't have to use any Y connectors or anything like that. And it works very well. Also, on the returns, another nice thing is if you want to run some CD audio into the board, it's a nice way to run CD audio into the board totally unblemished without going through the pans or the bass and treble controls or anything like that. And a CD player then doesn't take up any of the rest of those stereo inputs either. So that's another nice thing about the returns, the auxiliary returns, of which there are 2 of them. And so that's how that works. Also, there is a tape input. I use it for the foam patch. We have the JK Audio patch over here, which I'll demonstrate in just a few minutes. We'll talk about that. The board has 2 master gains. It has a master gain for the main output, and has a master gain for the what I call the production side of the board. This board has 2 separate mixing buses. I can have something going out on the main part of the board over here, which I do during the day. And then when we're not broadcasting our show, there's always something on our stream. And also, in addition to that, we're running a little low-power FM transmitter, which serves the immediate neighborhood here. And I always keep something on there so that if any of our neighbors want to tune in, of which we have one guy a couple of houses down that tunes in and listens to what we're doing, he can listen to that, and anybody right around us can as well. And so I keep that on there as well, and that works out really well in addition to streaming it out on the internet, which brings up an interesting point. Right now, I am streaming through a program called Nicecast. It's a program that has, for the Macintosh, it has a server and a streaming utility built right into it. So you can do shoutcasting with it to a distant shoutcast server or Live365 or something like that, or you can stream through its own built-in server, and people can just pick you up on your own DSL or cable connection, whatever you have. Here's a question that I need to see if anybody has the answer to out there. Some of you I know do shoutcasting, and if you do, I would like to know who you do it with. If you do any shoutcasting, who is your shoutcast provider? Who are you shoutcasting to? Because I'm looking for a server where I could put up at least 100 listeners. And if I can do that, then I'll go ahead and give out our stream URL on the broadcast. But I don't want to do that right now, because if 10 of you decided to slide in here, I wouldn't have any upload bandwidth. And I would have to set it so ridiculously low that none of you would be able to... Well, let's put it to you this way. An extreme minority would be able to get into the stream. I'd have to, just to keep all my bandwidth on reserve, I'd have to set it down to about 4 listeners max. And the other thing is, too, Dixie Broadcasting, when they go to broadcast us, they slide in here and pick up our feed on here as well. And then they pipe it out on their stream and to a few radio stations and whatever, and they use this feed to do it. So we had a case one week where they at Dixie Broadcasting couldn't get in because we already had a few listeners that slid in there. So I had to tell these guys on Tuesday nights, I said, make sure that you listen through Dixie Broadcasting stream. Don't come in here and log in on my feed because you're taking up a room where we need for Dixie Broadcasting to be able to get in. So anyway, so we had to take care of that problem. And so, but see, if I had a shoutcast provider, I could just send one stream to them. And if I could pick up, about 100 listeners at 24 KBPS, or 32 KBPS would be better. It'd be a little bit better quality, although 24 is not too shabby on this either. If I could do that, then we could possibly give the URL out. Dixie could still get in and pick it up, and everybody else could get in and pick it up, and it should be able to work out pretty good. So let me know if any of you out there have had some great success with a shoutcast provider. I'd like to know who it is, and maybe I'll try to get something up there, and we'll give the URL out then at that point where we can actually support some listeners. And that way you can listen to your heart's content, and you don't have to worry about taking up my bandwidth here, of which I only have 512 up and 512 down. So there you go. That's the deal as far as the bandwidth is concerned. Okay, so anyway, so we're doing the streaming, and I can, let me see what's going out over the stream right now. I'll pot up this little radio that's on the low power FM here.
But the state law is contradictory to that. I doubt very seriously if the 58% of San Francisco voters are going to change their mind. The likelihood that the 58% of voters in San...
Yeah, it's Jerry Hughes, who is a talk show host out of Florida, whose broadcast I've been on, and he's had me on as a guest, and interviewed me several times, and we've been on each other's broadcast for that matter. Let me pot over here on the studio amp. It may have a little bit better drive to it. Let's see.
If the state appeals court indeed upholds California law, then they will uphold the overturn of Proposition H by Judge James Warman. But it remains to be seen. You know, I don't know that San Francisco really considers themselves part of the United States any longer anyway. If they don't, then certainly they, they're not bound by the Constitution and bound by the Bill of Rights. And with all due respect to those good people in San Francisco, to the good folks there, there's probably a lot of folks outside San Francisco and in the other cities and counties and such of the other 49 states and part of California who don't care. That if that's what the crazy people of San Francisco want to do, they've done it. And what I would do if I were the neighboring city of San Francisco or a neighboring city of San Francisco, I would take up a collection from the town residents to put up a great big sign at every entrance of the community in which I lived that would say, attention terrorists, robbers, muggers, rapists, thieves, murderers. San Francisco does not allow handguns in their city.
Okay, anyway, he's talking about some of the nonsense going on in some of these big cities where they're having the problems with the illegals and all this kind of stuff. Jerry Hughes, by the way, is a talk show host out of Florida on the Accent Radio Network, and we put him through on our stream along with several others throughout the day when we're not doing something on Tuesday nights. And it's a lot of fun picking these people up. You know, one thing I love about guys like him and various others, they don't pick sides. They just say how it is and go on from there. And that's a lot the way we operate, because I look at it this way. I don't care who you are. If you're in corruption, you're in corruption. And we're fighting that now in our local city government here. And I won't go into a whole lot of that here, but just suffice to say, corruption knows no boundaries. Let's just put it that way. Okay, moving right along. So that's the board is split up so we can run something on the other side. And see, that feed, the way you heard that feed a while ago, that was just through the speakers that are on the studio amp, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. But that's going through the other side of the board at the same time I'm doing this here, and you don't hear any of it right now. It's totally on the opposite side. There is a switch to do a mix down between the two sides of the board and bring the other side in. But that switch, I got it. That's another one I've got to spray because I don't use it very often, and it's getting to the point where it only one channel comes in, and that's about it. So I'm going to have to pull the bottom off of this board and clean all this stuff out. And they seem to get like that. If you don't use them, they get really goofy. They just, switches just don't make contact anymore, you know, after a while, and you just have to get in there and clean them up. That's all you can do. So that's one of the nice thing about one of the nice things about the Mackie is that you can split it off and you can have half of it for productions and half of it or any amount of it for productions and the rest of it for whatever you want to do. Okay, now let's bring up the JK audio patch. This is kind of a neat thing. I know we had Ray who talked about his that he had purchased recently. And they're nice. They're JK audio patches are real nice. Now, the only thing, as I alluded to earlier in the last podcast, you want to have USA only power supply for these, because the one that comes with them, which is a universal supply for use in both here in the States as well as Europe, that supply is not clean. And I've had a lot of trouble with my European / US power supply, the universal one. So that's why I ordered a USA-only one. I was getting shocks off the thing when I go try to plug stuff into it, and it just was horrible. But I'll let you hear my JK audio patch, which is the Innkeeper PBX on a USA-only supply. And what we're going to do, let me get my cursor position here, because I'm going to pause here for a minute, and I'm going to lay down some audio into the voicemail system through the JK patch. And no sense in you hearing me say what I'm going to say twice. So let me go ahead and lay this stuff down on the voicemail system, and then I will release the pause when I get done talking, and then you can hear whatever I'm going to say just out of the voicemail, and that'll give you an idea of the quality of the phone patch. So anyway, here's the here's what the JK audio patch sounds like from the opposite end. We're going to call my voicemail, which is on Broad Voice. It's an excellent voicemail as far as accurate production. Whatever you put into it is what you get back. It is a wonderful digital system they have over there. And it's perfect when you're wanting to get used to how to adjust levels on something such as this. So anyway, we're going to record some audio in, and you can hear what the JK audio patch sounds like as if you are the listener at the other end.
As urgent.
Okay, this is the test of the JK audio Innkeeper PBX down the phone line. Now, the Innkeeper PBX, the only difference between it and most of the JK audio phone patches that are out there is it requires a telephone. The way it works is it's a little box that is, it's a little flat box, not very big at all, and it has a connection for the telephone receiver's cord to plug into it from the telephone itself, and then there's a, and it comes with a real short little cord that goes right from the back into the JK audio phone patch to the receiver jack on the side of the telephone, and then there's another jack on the JK audio patch so the receiver can plug in and pick up where the JK audio patch left off. And what can happen is, let's do the demonstration here. We're on the patch now. Now let me switch over to the telephone. This is the sound of the telephone. Now we're on the telephone. Test 1, 2, testing, testing. This is the sound of the Panasonic telephone, which is a proprietary phone on this phone system. And now we'll go back to the JK audio patch and we'll talk through it. Now, one problem about these patches is that the FCC has placed a mandate on how much audio level these things can put out. Some of you may have noticed that sometimes it's hard to hear when you call in on some radio stations to be put on the air. It's hard to hear the host of the broadcast when you're calling in because the FCC has mandated that the audio be so low as opposed to you know, a regular telephone. Now what I'm going to do is show you how I can circumvent what the FCC has done, and I can get rid of that problem. This patch, because of it being what it is, has a setting for different types of telephones. In this case, I'm using it in the mode normally reserved for electric microphone telephones. This patch also has a switch on the back that switches it for carbon mic telephones. Now, electric microphones are way more sensitive than carbon mic telephones. So what we're going to do is we're going to put it in the carbon mic mode when we're actually using an electret telephone, if I can talk, and we'll let you hear what it sounds like. Okay, this is, let me back my level down here just a little bit. This is the way the phone patch sounds when it's in the mode for the carbon mics on an electret microphone telephone, okay? Now, what is neat about this is once in a while you'll run into cases on some talk shows where you'll get somebody that's irate over something and they'll call in and they'll start blasting their opinion down the phone line and you can't get a word in edgewise. Well, all you need to do now when you got a patch like this and you got it in this mode is turn it way up like this, and I guarantee you the guest or the caller who is irate will hear you and you will get the upper hand. And so that's what we have done. That's what we have done in most cases to regain control over the broadcast. So with that, let's go back to the regular microphone.
To send a message to one or more destinations, press 3.
Okay, that's enough of that. Okay, let me hang this up. But anyway, that's the way the patch sounds, the JK Audio patch. And you notice with the USA supply, it doesn't have nearly the hum that the power supplies have that are universal for these things. So there you go. That's the way that sounds. So it works out real well. And I'll tell you, you know, normally we're a very laid back bunch of folks here. We're not rough on people on the air because I don't like to be mistreated when I'm on the air. But you know yourself, have any of you ever listened to a talk show and you'll get somebody who will call in and they are just livid because somebody dare disagree with them. And they just don't come up for air. They just talk. And you're trying to get in there, and maybe there's a break coming up, and you're trying to get in there. Sir, hang on, because we got a break coming. And they don't want to shut up. They'll just keep going. Talk. And what ultimately happens is you lose control of the program. Well, that's the only thing I hate about most of these phone patches. They will not put out enough volume to allow you to gain control of the broadcast. So this is a good workaround to solve that problem. Now, I used to have a phone patch put out by a company called Telos, and I hated that thing. That thing didn't have enough audio for anything. It was weak. And as I said, none of these do. It's a FCC thing. And I was talking to him about that, and I said, well, I said, this stinks. I said, there's no way I could really do things adequately with this. I mean, there once in a while, there are just some times when you have to kick in the afterburners, and that's what I call that when I kick in that switch, because sometimes you just have to regain the floor, if you know what I'm saying. So anyway, I got rid of that Telos, and I have this, and this is much, much better. And also, another nice thing about the JK patches that I like, the JK audios, is that have you ever noticed when you call in on some talk shows and they'll put you on the air, there's a loud squelch tail type sound, like a psh, you know, when they cut you over to put you actually through. And all the other ones, like the Telos and the Gettners are the most popular. Most of the radio stations that most of you have probably called in on use what's called a Gettner. And the Gettners were the first true digital patches that came out, and they were good for what they were for their day. But technology has advanced so much, and what that data burst like was for, that squelch tail thing was for, was it allowed you to set your or what it allowed it to do, it allowed the patch to send a signal down the phone line and check for how it needed to adjust the line, is supposedly what I've been told. In other words, when it would send that burst down the phone line, it would listen back for the echo, and it would know how to determine the proper balance impedance for the phone line. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've been told. JK Audio has figured out a way to circumvent that, and that's a good thing, because that I notice more people stumble on that squelch tail when they go to air. In fact, one of the things that used to aggravate the daylights out of me, and I know why it happens, and so I don't get too critical about it anymore. But occasionally you'll be listening to a talk show host and he'll go, "Okay, let's go to John in New York. Hello, John, you're on the air." And John will go, "Hello, this is John." And of course you're thinking, "He just said that." And of course what it was that John didn't hear the host referring to him. Because during the time he said, "Let's go to John in New York," John was hearing psh, like that over the phone patch. He wasn't hearing the host say, "Okay, let's go to John." So this is, you know, unfortunately, that wasted a lot of time, you know, that could be taken up by substantive commentary. And so this is where the JK Audio patches really shine. I don't care which one you have. Any of you out there have JK Audio patches and can afford them for phone recordings, get them. They're worth it. Just know that you got to get a USA power supply for them if you're going to enjoy a quieter sound out of them, you know, hum-free. Now, for those of you that are wondering, the adapters for the JK Audio patches, you might want to double check this with a VOM unless they've changed them, but at least for the Innkeeper PBX, they are a 9 volt adapter. They're about 9.5 volts when you put a VOM on them, and they are very sensitive to over voltage, so you want to make sure that something is exactly in the 9 volt range, or, you know, it can be anywhere pretty much in the 9 volt range as long as it doesn't exceed 10 volts. You're pretty much okay, but it has to be 9 volts. And I don't remember what the tip is on it. So if you got a VOM, you're going to have to check the tip and the shield on it to find out what the polarity is. I believe it's positive tip, but I can't be absolutely sure of that, so don't quote me on it. Because for a while, until I got my substitute power supply, I was running it off of a step-down adapter like you use for the car. And I was running it off of a 12-volt Astron power supply to get by, just to get rid of that stupid hum adapter, that universal. So, you know, that was my workaround for that. So, anyhow, that is what the voltage is on the JK Audio patches. At least that's what it is on the Innkeeper PBX. Yours may differ. So please do not try doing stuff with your patch until you know what the voltage is, because I do not want to be responsible. Remember, anything you try that I suggest here, remember, I can give you only so much information, and some of it is at your own risk. So make sure you get adequate help and make sure you know exactly what you're doing before you try anything. And just because I try something doesn't always mean that it's best for you to try it. Not that I know everything. It's just some of us are more, what's the word I want to use? Some of us are more comfortable doing this stuff than others. And I've been at dickering around with electronics ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and I've just about blown up everything you could think of before I ever got to a point where I knew what I was doing. And so this is why I say just be careful, okay? And I don't say that in such a way as to say that I know everything, because I don't. None of us do. We're always in the learning curve, okay? There's some of us out here that have already paid the price, and this is why I say things with a stiff warning, because there's no sense in you paying the price if somebody else has already done it for you. And some things are more tolerant of things like reverse polarity, stuff like that, than other things. Now, some things, if you just barely hit them with the polarity reversed on a power adapter, they'll fry. So you want to be very careful. There are some devices out there on the market that they protected them by putting in a forward emitting diode, which prevents current from going in the reverse direction, thus preventing you from blowing up that piece of equipment. And what would happen in that case, if you get the polarity backwards, you'd probably smoke that diode is what would happen. But the diode is more tolerant than some pieces of equipment are that don't have them. I recall the story of putting the polarity accidentally backwards on a Sony cassette recorder. It was a WMD6C. Some of you may remember the Walkman WMD6Cs, which was the predecessor to the mini discs and now the digital recorders that we all enjoy today. And just sticking that adapter in there just for a split second was enough to kill that recorder. So sometimes you can only make the mistake once, and no matter how quick you are, it's too late. So just please, please be aware of that. Don't do something if you're not comfortable. And if you absolutely don't know what you're doing, don't try it. Okay? I'm by this one on the JK patches and various other electronics like I am these batteries down here. Unless you know what you're doing, don't go there. Okay? So we have the JK audio patch. We have Behringer headphone amp over here in the rack, which holds up to 8 different headphones. And I think I'm sure they've discontinued this one. I haven't seen it on their website anymore. So you'll just have to check with groups like RF Specialties and various other broadcast suppliers, see if they still have these. This will take up to 8 pairs of phones, this existing one that I have here. It has 4 channels of output, and each channel will support 2 pairs of phones, and the channels consist of 4 knobs, bass, treble, and then a pan that allows you to pan from the main audio bus in the headphone amp to a jack by each headphone jack. Each one has its own independent input. So, like, for example, let's say I'm on the air and there's something I need to hear that Trish doesn't need to hear. I can put something through my headphones that she doesn't necessarily need to hear. I recall one night when we had severe weather warnings, I was putting out stuff during our broadcast for points east of us because of the fact that we have a couple of listeners that listen to us, at least one that I know of, maybe two, but at least one that listens out east of us over in St. Louis. And so I started putting out the weather information about what we were getting here where we live in Owensville. So that he would know what was coming his way. And as it turned out, I was able to put the Knoll Weather Radio Station out of my C Crane CC radio. I was able to take its audio output, patch that into the input on the headphone amp just for my phones only, and I simply panned that thing in slightly in the background so I could still hear the guests that we were interviewing, and yet in the background I still had the Knoll Weather Radio, so anytime any alerts came through, I knew them right away, and I was able to throw them out on this thing and get them out to where anybody east of us could have heard what was coming their way. And so that worked out really well. So you can do that on this amp. You can, I can have something patched into Trish's headphones that's not in mine, or vice versa. I can put something through a pair of headphones for a guest that's not in either one of our phones. And then, of course, all headphones can monitor the main bus of the headphone amplifier, which comes out of the mixing board. So that's the neat thing about the headphone amp. It also has stereo mono for each pair of phones. You can mute right or left channel. I don't know why that's in there, but they did. And the Behringer headphone amp also has a master gain. I don't know what the new ones have compared to what these have, but that's certainly what this one has. The amplifier we have, the studio amp, is a Samsung, and that thing, it's a very basic amp. It's built very well, though. It's built well. It's very rugged. It's very basic. It has on, off, and then a volume control for each channel. Very plain. Has a large heat sink on the back. It's about 75 watts per channel. Has quarter-inch balance inputs and RCA unbalanced inputs, and quarter-inch mono outputs, or quarter-inch outputs for each speaker, 1/4-inch jack for the left, 1 for the right, and then it has the little press-in connectors like they have on the back of stereo receivers where you push in on the spring-loaded clips, push your wires in the hole, and then let go, and then the wires are locked into place, and so that's how that works. That's all there is on that amp. Very, very basic. So that pretty much concludes most of the studio. Now, the last item on the list that we're going to cover is the computer. This is a Macintosh, what was a 400 megahertz power PC, which has been upgraded to be a 1.5 GB processor. I put in a new processor in there to bring it up to 1.5 GB. And it has a Digigram audio sound card in it. the reason we did that was the sound hardware in most computers is very inadequate, particularly if it's motherboard sound hardware. And it was in this machine, no exception. So we put the Digigram audio sound card in, and it's, of course, much, much better. It has balanced inputs, balanced outputs. You can run them balanced or unbalanced, just depending how you want to wire things. And also, it has balanced digital out as well. And then a connection has another type of input, looks very much like a video connector on the back of a computer, and that's called audio line plus sync. And I don't know exactly all there is to know about that, but there are other devices, I guess, that accept that connector, so they have it on here anyway, and it's a selectable item in the input list on the Digigram VX222V2 audio sound card. Digigram.com is where you can go to investigate the line of sound cards that they have. The sound card works very, very well in conjunction with the mixing board in that it's given me a whole bunch of extra room to work with as far as feeding a balanced signal into the computer. I also can feed a digital signal out of the computer to my mini disc deck sitting over here, and then I can feed something from the mini disc deck digitally back into the computer, which is very nice. And the card also has the software that allows you to control its gain. You can do all of that, which, like most of the cards have. But there's one extra thing that really has thrilled me about having this card in here. Now, first of all, I'll give you the pluses, and some of these are not totally Digigram's pluses. These are some pluses I found in some other places. One of the things that I hate is my sound not being separate from the screen reader. There are times where it's nice to have your screen reader coming out of the computer speaker, but sound coming out of the sound card from specific applications. And so what I did was I downloaded a program, and you can get this for any sound card, by the way. Now, this is a Mac program, so I don't know what you guys are going to do on the Windows side on this one, but but if you have a Macintosh, this is a cool program. So if you have either a USB audio device or a built-in sound or a built-in sound card, or a sound card that fits in the standard bus slots on your computer, this little program is for you. It's called Detour, and it's put out by a company called Roganeva Software. And you can find them. Usually you'll find them on Apple's website. You'll find Audio Hijack and some of those programs up there that they put out. And you've heard some of our Mac users on the Blind Cool Tech list talk about Audio Hijack. Well, they also make this program called Detour. And Detour, in my opinion, is the best thing since the invention of hair. And I mean that sincerely. That is a wonderful piece of work. What Detour allows you to do is when you first install it on the machine, you go in and there's a feature that allows you to add applications. So you go down the list and you add all your applications into this program called Detour. And you make Detour aware that they exist. Like, for example, I have iTunes in there, Real Player in there, QuickTime Player, and even the audio output off of Safari, which is the web browser for the Macintosh. And the reason I did that is because Safari sometimes delivers audio. Like, for example, some QuickTime audio, if they use what's called embedded players, will come out of Safari. And also now, with the changes that have happened and recently for Windows Media, whenever you play Windows Media stuff on the Macintosh, rather than have a separate player now, they just have Windows Media coming through the QuickTime player, so which means that Windows Media 2 will play in embedded players, so which means that any audio off Windows Media files is going to come out of the audio out of Safari. Well, what I have done in this case is I've selected all of my audio programs. Every one of my audio programs have been set up to route their audio through the Digigram VX222V2 sound card. Okay? my screen reader and all of my system sounds like beeps and bongs and every other thing you can think of are all set to come through the speaker of the computer as well. So any speech or noises is set to come through the computer's own internal speaker, and I can have any of the applications, any of the audio applications set to come through the Digigram VX222V2 sound card, which means that I can be feeding a stream somewhere, either recording a stream, or I can be feeding a stream into some other recording device or something like that. And while that stream is going on, I can be surfing the net on the same computer, and the screen reader doesn't come through. And Detour allows you to be totally flexible that way. Now, some of your programs, such as Audio Hijack, have their own audio input selector and also audio output selector. But not all programs do. So, for example, if you want iTunes to come out through the computer's computer's digital sound card as opposed to the computer speaker, you have to use a program like Detour to force the issue, because there's no selector in iTunes to make that happen. And so, anyway, I installed this program, and it works out very, very nice, because I can have everything totally split up, and it's a wonderful piece of work. So it, in concert with the driver software for the Digigram VX222V2 sound card, is just a wonderful combination. And you can mix and match any audio application you want. Doesn't matter. They all work well in Detour. And unfortunately, Detour has been discontinued. So if you are a user of System 10, go and get it now before someday it's no longer on the website. I already have my backup copy, and I wouldn't let go of it for nothing. It's my life preserver in this kind of work that we do. And I wish the only thing that I regret is I wish I could run it on System 9, but unfortunately it doesn't work on the old System 9 computers. So it's strictly a System 10 menu item, but boy, is it good. And it's a simple little program. It consists of a preference pane, so you can go in and set it up. And then it has a menu where you can select it from the pull-down menu. And you can go through, once you've set it up, and select any of the applications you want, and then just go down through the menu options to put them wherever you want them. You can raise and lower the volume of any application right from the pull-down menu. The list just goes on and on and on. So that's the deal with Detour. Now the negatives on the Digigram VX222V2 audio sound card. One problem that I'm having, and I'm thinking about experimenting and see if I can correct it. I may not be able to. No harm done. I'll just reinstall it if it doesn't work. As it stands right now, I'm running into a problem where if I shut down the computer and reboot after so many days, I'll come back and all my applications will come up with a dialog that says missing audio device, and I have to totally reselect the audio devices. I have to reselect the Digigram VX222V2 card. Reason? There's no preference file created by the VX222V2 controller application to save all of that data. So it defaults back to a low audio output, and the only way to bring the audio gain back up, which optimum gain for the VX222V2 is about 72%. To get that accomplished, I have to go into the sound preferences. I have to select it in the main sound preferences, then go and drag the slider, the audio output slider, up to about 72%, then quit interacting with that slider and go back and then reselect the main output back over to the internal speaker, and then as long as the machine remains booted, I will have audio at a decent output through the VX222V2 sound card. The other problem that I run into occasionally is all of my inputs will be missing. And what I think is going on here is this driver is set to load pretty late in the chain, and so by the time it gets done loading, everything else is already loaded, and they have loaded without discovering the driver. So idea that I'm going to try perhaps this weekend is going in, and I'm going to have to circumvent permissions under System 10 to get this done. I'm going to go in and maybe change the title of that driver just slightly, and I don't know, this may backfire on me, so this is another one of them experiments right off my brain that I can't guarantee is going to work. what I might do is go in and rename that driver. In other words, not change the name of it per se, but put a space in front of the name of that driver, forcing that driver to load faster than the rest of the items in the extension driver's folder, and see if it doesn't cause that problem to go away. If it backfires on me, I'll just simply go back in and rename it what it was and just be done with it. So that's the deal as far as that goes. So we'll see what happens, and it may work, but then again, I don't know. We'll just have to see how it goes. So that's the deal as far as that goes. And so the sound card works real good, and like I say, I can't ask for better audio when I goes when it goes to doing the mini disc stuff, that kind of thing. Okay, now moving right along, speaking of the mini disc machine is definitely a discontinued item. It was discontinued the time I got it. It's a Sony, and I can't remember its model number, but I've had a lot of trouble with it, not so much with it running. It runs okay, but not too terribly long after I got it, the eject button broke. That's the weak link in the chain to eject the disc. The button broke, and I had to get in there, and what they had a little plastic piece which pressed up against a little micro switch on a circuit board, tiny circuit board, not much bigger than your finger, and that little board, the little clip that held that board in place broke. And so I got in there real fast and fixed that because I was afraid it was going to ground out on something and cook something in the mini disc machine. So I got in there and fixed that real quick, and that took care of that problem. It's not fixed where I can use it, but at least it's not going to ground out on anything as far as that goes. So that's what we did with that, and it seems to have taken care of that issue quite nicely. To eject the disc, I got to use a remote, unfortunately. There's no way around that. So that's the problem as far as that end of it is concerned. But I mean, all in all, it's not a bad deck. It's the problem with Sony is they make a lot of extremely cheap junk, and then they make very expensive good pro stuff. No better case of that than in the history of Sony. There was a time where I had a Sony Model 142 cassette recorder. It was a portable. It was a mono. Excellent machine. It had third head where I could monitor the tape as it's being done. Had manual automatic level. Had one of the best built-in mics I'd ever heard anywhere. And just did a fantastic recording. Well, Sony decided to reinvent the wheel and come out with a Sony 5000 EV. And I don't know if there's any of you out there in the listening group out there that has had a 5000 EV. But in my personal opinion, I was very underwhelmed. They had excessive flutter. The microphone was weak. There was a lot of hiss that was introduced in the recording due to a noisy preamp stage, and every one of them that I've seen was like that. The transport that they put in there was a plastic transport. The belt that drove the capstan was not much better than a rubber band. It was a real thin little belt they had in there. The only decent feature they added to it was a variable speed control, but the automatic level was horrible in them, in the sense that if you were recording an automatic level and you yelled into it real loud, the level would go so low that it took forever to come back up. And let's say you're reading something on tape for somebody and you get excited and you get loud like that, then the level would go down. And, well, here, I'll mimic it with the board here. You would talk real loud, and then your level would be kind of like down here. And then as you would keep talking, it would gradually come up, like what I'm doing right now with the pot on the mixing board. And it was actually a little slower than this. I'm actually coming up a little faster to conserve time. But it would just gradually rise back up until finally you were at the full rated output where you were before you talked too loud into it. Let me go ahead and turn that back up. But you get the general idea. Well, it took a lot longer for it to come up than what I was doing there. And so during that time, you were real, real weak. And they were just a disgusting recorder. And it just underscores one of the problems that I found that Sony got into. They had their, and they had two distinct separate divisions. They had their consumer division and their professional division. And I know that because a good friend of mine up in Chicago had several DAT machines, one professional and several consumer ones. And those machines were, they were all, those consumer ones all had to be repaired through the consumer division, and the pro one had to go to the pro division. So Sony had like totally two separate divisions. And for two distinctly separate pieces of equipment. So that's the way that whole thing went. So anyway, I don't know what I'm going to go to after if you know, when I go to replace this mini disc deck. I know I will eventually need to replace it with something, but I don't know what yet. Maybe something from JVC or who knows. We'll see. I'll talk to them about it at RF and see how it goes. The other machine that's here is the Marantz, and I can't remember its model number either. It is discontinued. And it's not a bad little machine. It has a little bit of trouble playing MP3s. They get a little bit choppy sometimes. When it goes to switch tracks, sometimes they always don't buffer properly when you go to play an MP3 disc in it. And once in a great, great while, it'll either not play a disc all the way through, or it'll get choppy and it'll start, you know, drop in and out, in and out, in and out. And the only way to get rid of the problem is to re-cue the disc and start over. Other than that, it's not a bad machine as far as playing the Redbook CD format is concerned. It is a broadcast type deck in that it has balanced right and left channel analog out and a balanced digital output, and it has, as well as your regular RCA outputs and a RCA coaxial output and one other digital output, it even has an optical output. So it's got plenty of connections as far as that goes. And we will go ahead and start it up. And here's the thing I love on the Marantz machine. And I sure hope they have a better model than this as far as the quirks, though, with the MP3 playback. Also, another quirk is if you select variable pitch on the front of the machine, the clear feature does not clear it on the front of the machine. You got to clear it through the remote. There's a defect in that, and they over at Marantz are aware of it. So that's the problem with that's just a few of the problems with this machine. But for just doing what we do for the broadcast, it's perfect as far as that goes. So let's go ahead and cue something here. I'm going to fade up this bumper. Okay, now, let's go ahead and we'll re-cue this clip. This is what we used to come into the broadcast with. Now, there, right next to the headphone button on this thing, there's a cue button. See how you can kind of like rock. It's almost like, you know, rocking the laser pickup back and forth. Okay, now I paused it. Then I'll hit the cue button with it in pause. And then when we're actually ready to hit the air, we simply hit the play button. And then we say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Information Corner. I'm Sam, and of course, Trish would say I'm Trish. She'd fill in her part, and that's how we always start the show, and the CD player is real reliable where that's concerned. I just hope they have a better model than this for one other reason, and that is, whoops, wrong pot, and that is because the other problem this machine has is a problem with the right by the balanced outputs in the back. There's a couple little trim pots that are inside of two little holes in the back, one by each output, and they're fine as long as you leave them set at the factory default. But I had to trim them because you know, the I wanted a little bit more robust audio coming into the Mackie board here. And the only problem with turning those little screws is once you turn them, they don't stay real good. In other words, you can set them and rebalance them out and everything, and every so often the one of them will get just a little bit of dirt in behind it, and it'll quit making contact, and you got to stick a screwdriver in there and twist it back and forth a couple of times to get the dirt off of the pot in there, and then reset it again. And so that's the only downside to those back there. So my recommendation, if you get a Marantz broadcast quality CD player that's like this, if they're still using those trim pots, leave them alone. Don't turn them. Because what they do is they put a little bit of some sort of substance in there. I don't know what it is. Have you ever noticed when you buy a device, any of you that have taken things apart, notice that when you buy something off the shelf and you go to try to get into it, they put a little something around the screws, kind of like, it's not Loctite, because Loctite, you ever put something on and you use Loctite to make sure the screws don't get turned, you don't get them out. Well, this is just something, it's a little bit of a sealant they put on there, just enough so that if you turn it, you know that they will know at the factory that you got into the product if they find that the seal was broken. And I don't know, they must have used that on these pots here or whatever. Of course, the warranty was up when I, you know, adjusted these things. But, you know, the point of the matter is, if they didn't mean for them to be adjusted, why were they back there? You know, it's one of those kind of things. But my recommendation, if you run into a CD player that has balanced outputs, whether it's a Marantz or anything else, leave them set. Don't fool with them unless they absolutely have to be fooled with, because they're never right once you, you know, turn them. So just leave them wherever the factory had them set and just be done with it. Like I say, I'm sure there has to be a better model than this one that I have now, because the, you know, like I say, I made them aware of several bugs in this model. And so I'm sure by now they've discontinued this. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to find out from John Sims. I'm going to see if he will come up on a broadcast, and if we can interview him, we'll have him up for a future Blind Cool Tech podcast, and we'll have him talk about the latest stuff that's out there for broadcasters and people who just like to go the extra mile for equipment. So that, in a word, is pretty much the studio. As far as some of these items that I didn't have the model numbers for, if you really need them for some reason, I will be glad to try to get somebody to look at these devices. You know how it goes. Some of them, you know, after a while, you have the equipment for so long. I mean, I've had the mini disc deck for about almost 4 years now, the CD player for about three. And when you don't talk to a whole lot of people about them for a while and you don't think a lot about them, they just work. You know, model numbers are something, if you don't use them, you lose them. And so I'm sure the booklets are around here somewhere. It's just going to be a big giant pain, because we have a whole big thing upstairs just full of instruction booklets. And of course, now they have to put every model in one book. So, you know, it's very hard to scan them things in, and you got to go through such painstaking work to do that. But I can get a sighted person to look on the back of these things, if you want to know the model of the mini disc machine and the Marantz machine. But just suffice to say, you could work around by just getting the latest model and not worrying about what these things are, because trust me, I'm sure they've had to work out a lot of the bugs that were in this one when I first got it. Lesson learned: don't be the first one on the block to get something. And this CD player had not been out that long when I purchased it. If I had known that, I probably would have went with a slightly different model that had been matured just a little bit. And, I mean, it's okay. I mean, I'm not going to just get rid of it or anything just because of these little quirks. But if I want to get rid of that problem with the pots in the back, I could take that apart and probably desolder those from the board and just put jumpers with resistors in there and have it set at a fixed rate and just be done with it. I mean, it's not something that is insurmountable. You just got to know what rating the resistors have to be, and you just bridge them out. That's all. And then the problem with the variable pitch, I can clear that with the remote control, and I never use variable pitch anyway. So the fact that it doesn't clear from the front panel is not a real big issue. I mean, it'd be nice if it would, but it's not a huge issue. The problem with the MP3s, I don't play MP3s in here that much. If I want to copy something from MP3, I will stick it in the computer and just copy it out of the Digigram card, because it's got the digital output anyway. So that's how I do that. And it'll do the conversion rate up to 44.1 kHz for the mini disc machine, which, by the way, despite that problem with the eject, is still recording well. And I think what I'm going to do when I replace that, I'm going to get a pro version of that. But the one thing about this equipment, the reason I say you don't want to be the first kid on the block like I was with the CD player, is usually the broadcasters will get these problems ironed out real fast because time is money. And they don't want to put up with it. So the, you know, the broadcasters, the bigger broadcasters out there that are in the bigger stations and stuff like that, they'll really yell if something's not exactly as it should be. And so I can just about guarantee you that a lot of these problems have already been resolved. And but as far as that goes, for the most part, everything I've gotten around here, it just works very, very well. And like I say, these problems, unless somebody makes them known to you, some of them being possibly my fault, most people have never known they were there. Most people don't use variable pitch. Very few people play MP3s and standalone stuff in the broadcast industry. So, you know, that little problem, that little stuttering problem we get occasionally when you play an MP3, which is not very often, but once in a while happens, is something that at the time, who knows if anybody knew it existed, you know. So I probably could have sent it back and they would have fixed it for me, but I didn't want to be without it. So that's where my fault comes in. And then on those trim pots in the back, it was my fault probably for turning them. I probably could have lived with it the way it was. But, you know, you have this attitude that these holes are back here for a reason, doggone it. Since I know there's turn pots in there, I'm going to set them the way I like them. You know, and anyway, so that's the deal as far as that goes. So I can't blame all of that on them totally at Marantz. Some of it was my own doing. Well, like I say, all in all, it works well for what we want to do with it with the broadcast. I can cue on it real easy. It's got the cue button on it. So it's meant to be a broadcaster's machine, and it works very, very well other than that. It has direct entry, so you can pull up a selection directly from the front keypad. Which isn't really a keypad. What it is, you have the display on the front of the unit and a row of 10 keys along the bottom, the extreme right-hand key being 0, and the left-hand key being the digit 1, and then they just go along the bottom row 1 through 10. So that's how that goes. So anyway, that's pretty much the deal with the studio. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact us through the form on the website at www.theinformationcorner.com. That's www.theinformationcorner.com. And we will be glad to answer anything that you have. Just be aware, two things, that it might take us a little bit to get to you. Also, effective this past weekend, I had an automated response put on that so that the listeners to our broadcast would know that we received emails, but would understand immediately that we can't just always immediately jump back to them. Now, sometimes we're blessed. The day that we heard from, the one who asked about the microphones was Jim Fettgather. And Jim, it's good to hear from you, by the way. I enjoyed hearing from you. And the situation worked out so we could answer his mail right away, and we could answer Harry's mail from up in Michigan. And so as far as that goes, everything worked out real good there. But sometimes we got one guy, God bless him, he's a nice man, he lives up in Iowa, that's a listener to our show, just loves us to death. I don't know what we've done, but he just loves our broadcast. And emails us every so often and says, call me. And he puts his phone number in there and everything. And you know how it goes. You don't have all the time in the world just to be sitting on that telephone talking. And so, you know, I've had to be careful about that because, you know, you can't just be calling every time you turn around. I mean, can you imagine if you had 70 listeners, for example, and all of them said, call me? You can see where this could go real fast. Or if I had 2,000 emails come in, which fortunately enough hasn't happened like that yet, but, you know, what if it did? You know, so if we're in the middle of doing research or something, we just put the emails in the to-do list and we get to them when we can. But we try to be as prompt as we can, and we are always, always glad to hear from anybody, whether it's from the broadcast that we do or whether it's from here, and I'll be honest with you, one of the things I love about doing this, and I want to say something to you guys that is a real blessing for me that I've come to grips with since I've started listening to the podcast here at Blind Cool Tech. You guys are a beautiful relief valve for me because we deal with a lot of heavy issues on our broadcast and a lot of heavy stuff when we do research. And any of you that have taken a peek at what we do over at the Information Corner, I think you know, okay? You know, these are a lot of issues that we have verified, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff that spells the uncertainty for a lot of the things as we have always known them as far as things going on in our nation today. A lot of changes that are not for the good, and we've been able to verify that. And when you deal with this heavy news, you need a place to get relief from it. And so when I do the Blind Cool Tech stuff, among some of the other things I do around here, it is my way of putting all the news and the stuff going on in the world on the shelf and coming here and doing stuff that I would really rather be doing. And that's talking about things on somewhat of a more happier note. Now, Trish and I, the way we do our broadcast is, though we try to awaken as many people as possible to things going on, like, for example, the proposal by the Council on Foreign Relations to make North and South America and Canada into one nation. A lot of people would say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, when you consider the fact that the new government that they're proposing will not allow for voting in legislators and stuff, they'll all be appointed. That's not a good thing because when you have appointed officials, once they know that they are unelectable, they can run roughshod over the citizenry. And this is why that's not a good thing. And when you know what you know, and you've studied history, and you know what you know throughout history, that does not bode well for the United States. And so, but there's a lot of people that don't want to believe that because they either buy into party line stuff or whatever. And we're out here saying, guys, you know, everybody's equally in the sin bin. You scrutinize everybody. I don't care. I'll tell you what a guy said at our concerned citizens meeting last night. He said, I don't care if it's my family that is in office. If they're doing something wrong, he said, I'm going to run them out, too, just like I'd run out any other politician. And it takes a very strong man to stand up and say that. And we don't have very many people that are like that. We have a lot of people in the world today that, well, my guy's in now. He can't do anything wrong. And I'll be quite frank with you. That's hard to deal with because realism and the way things really are in our world today and what a lot of people would choose to think are two entirely different things. And I'm just going to leave you with this one thing, and you go investigate it for yourself. And that's one thing I want to mention on here that is very, very important. And that is one of the most vital things in our nation that we're losing in this country is people's respecting of other people's right to have opinions on different issues. But there's a big difference in just badgering somebody because they don't agree with you and giving them documented information. And when you can verify that something is documented, that's the time when you need to at least have an open mind to rethink your position on something. And I'll give you a good point. I'm just going to give you a good analogy here, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. You want to learn more about some of the stuff that we cover, you can listen to it on the website. But a lot of people around me, including yours truly, used to think that when Ronald Reagan was in office that he set the world on fire, that he was the greatest president since the invention of hair. And that's a very dangerous thing if you don't know the full facts behind everything. And it wasn't until along came an individual who we've interviewed on our broadcast, by the way, a lady by the name of Charlotte Iserby. Now, Charlotte Iserby resides up in the state of Maine. She used to be in the Department of Education when Ronald Reagan was in office, and she uncovered what at the time was called America 2000, which is now called Goals 2000, which is now being set up in the schools. And I'm just going to leave you with this. We're not going to talk a whole lot about it, but if you want to know why education is in the tank these days and why people are coming out of the schools and they can't hardly read and they can't hardly write and the world is in the shape it's in, go to her website, which is www.deliberatedumbingdown.com. Okay, just like it sounds. Of course, dumbing has a B in it. You know, you got to make sure you put the B in there because, believe it or not, there's a lot of people don't know that. I've found that out so many times when I give that website out. But when you go up there, and you can't get any better than this, you don't even have to spend any money for it. Charlotte has a free ebook up there. Doesn't even cost you anything. And in that book, she has all the documentation regarding how the federal government, along with various other groups, plan to take over education and throw it into the tank to put through the globalist agenda. And in the globalist arena, reading, writing, arithmetic was not to be the central issue. It was behavior modification into what they wanted to shape into global citizens. This is what was being planned. And, of course, now this is what we see in the schools. But particularly if any of you have kids, you need to get that book. You need to get that free ebook. So go to her website, www.deliberatedumbingdown.com, and you can download that free ebook. Now, she does have it in print for those who want to buy the thing. It's a large book, and it's a little bit expensive. It'll be about $40-some-odd dollars, but that free book, if all you ever get is that free book, it's been a blessing that she's put that up there. And you know when a person is truly on the mark, when they will put all their research together and they will let it out to the public for free and not charge anything for it. And obviously, of course, it costs money to print books. That's why she had to charge for the printed copy. But she's got the free version up there. You can grab that and you can find out for yourself what's going on in education in this country. And now you know some of the stuff that we cover on our broadcast, if some of you have not visited our website. And there's a whole lot more than that. We'll just leave it at that. So that's the gist of what the Information Corner is all about. And we'll just leave it at that. Okay? All right. Well, I hope you found this recording good to listen to. I will get on out of here for now and bid you a very good farewell and so long. Enjoy all the podcasts that I'm hearing up there from various ones of you. Just keep them coming. And we'll do some stuff here. Some of the stuff that I have on the planning block is we'll probably do a tour of this place. I know a lot of you seem to like house tours. And so we'll probably do something here on that. We have, in addition to the studio here, I mentioned about this proprietary phone over here with our phone system. We put in a Panasonic KXT816 phone system. In this place, actually not in this place, we had it. We were up in Kansas City, and we just brought it with us and reinstalled it here when we moved. And it's nice, you know, for if I need to get a hold of Trish upstairs, I can just dial the extension number and call her. She can dial down here, and we'll demonstrate that on a future podcast. We'll do a tour of the house. We'll do I'll share with you some of my experiences in configuring hardware routers. Boy, I'm telling you, you talk about a guy earning his gray hairs honestly. My God, that was a disaster. I've been about 2 weeks in messing around with getting routers configured in here because we run an FTP server out of here. And that server has to have outbound ports so that traffic can go out and in, and people can gain access to the server. It has to have inbound ports and outbound, and all of that has to be open properly. And man, I'm telling you, what a nightmare. But we'll talk about some of that in a future podcast. Also, I told you about John Sims. We'll try to get him on a podcast. John Sims is with RF Specialties. We'll talk about some of the stuff that they have as an option for those of you that are looking for a little bit better than average equipment. Also, another thing, have you been looking to start your own FTP server? If you are a Mac user particularly, or if you know where you can round up a used System 10 Macintosh, you might want to consider this. We're going to possibly interview the people over at Maxim Technologies, which is a company that produces a FTP program called Rumpus. And Rumpus is quite an FTP program. I am running a server out of here with Rumpus FTP. And it is it, now it's a little bit on the expensive side, but aside, all server programming is, you know, computer programs that turn your computer into a server. Most server software is pretty expensive. You're going to pay about $200 for email server programs and FTP / HTTP file server programs and various web hosting programs to turn your computers into a web server or whatever the case may be. But see, the good thing about it is with the Unix kernel, that has opened the door to a lot of stuff under System 10. And this Rumpus program can't be beat. So I may bring those folks up on the broadcast and talk about Rumpus because it's totally voiceover accessible. And there is nothing that you as a blind person cannot do to that FTP server. If you want to make some changes and you want to change it to configure it however you want it done, you can do it. So we'll do a broadcast on that one as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up. So I'm going to get on out of here. You take good care of yourselves. And this has been a wonderful time here is doing this recording for you. It's been a joy, and we hope to do something again on a future podcast here very shortly. So until next time, this is yours truly, Sam Britton, here from Owensville, Missouri, saying so long. And remember, if you want to contact us, you can contact us at www.theinformationcorner.com. And once we get in contact with you, we can exchange email as to how you can connect with us. And some of you have already gotten our some of our other email addresses. I know, Jim, we gave you one. And just be aware that if you email us again at any time, I'm referring specifically to Jim Fettgather because we heard from him and we heard from Harry up in Michigan. Either one of you guys, if you email us again and you get an automated response from either one of those boxes, just please do not let that bother you. We just did that to discourage spam and discourage listeners that cannot wait 2 minutes before they receive a contact from us. So, you know, just be aware that we will receive emails. We just set them up to get around that problem. So with that, we are out of here, and we'll be looking forward to hearing from you. And till then, so long and blessings. Talk soon. Bye for now.